Move the world one clean car at a time. Join the team at Vacutech, national leaders in car wash system manufacturing. Whether you're skilled in assembly, mechanics, or just ready to learn, we want to hear from you. If you're driven, dedicated, and looking for a new career path, don't miss this opportunity. Stop by during open interviews this Tuesday, June 24th from 11 till 4:30 p.m. at 1350 High Tech Drive. That's Vacutech, an NCS company. Your next great career starts here. See you Tuesday.
So my buddy asked me what I was doing with a fork in the toaster. Experimenting, I said. Well, the same goes for you tuning up or fixing your own 4x4 side-by-side or lawnmower, because you won't do it, and if you do it, you'll do it wrong. Look, sticking a fork in a toaster ain't figuring anything out, and you ain't better off just doing nothing. I mean, you could just wait till it bursts into flames and really do it with flair. So don't experiment with your tune-up. Get it done right at Hando Service Center on Sheridan's Heartland Drive.
Have you ever considered a gift certificate to Eye Care of the Bighorns for someone who has vision correction? Many companies don't provide eye insurance, which makes the burden of annual eye exams and glasses or contact lenses an out-of-pocket expense. Eye Care of the Bighorns also carries your favorite sunglasses and athletic eye protection from names you love, like Maui Jim, Costa, and more. Stop by Eye Care of the Bighorns or call 307-674-0444 today.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Thursday, June 19th. From Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. This morning, I'm joined by Sheridan County Commissioners Christy Haswell and Nick Siddle. Good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Good morning, Floyd.
It is indeed Emerald City.
It is. Yeah. Looks absolutely beautiful outside. Tomorrow, summer begins. And unfortunately, if we look back at years past, the emerald will start to kind of dim a little bit. It'll start to go a little brown.
It looked like this morning, maybe Sunday, though, we might have a chance for a little bit of precipitation. So we might keep it going for a while.
Fingers crossed on that.
Yeah, hopefully.
That drive over every morning is amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
I heard it's going to be a little hot for those Bighorn Trail Runners this weekend,
those
though.
Poor folks.
It's supposed to be really hot today and tomorrow.
Yeah, I looked at the temperature today when I was trying to choose a shirt, and I haven't done the flip yet. I got enough sweaters that I got to do what my mom did, where I got to take those and put them somewhere else.
Yep.
And holy cow, I was like, I got nothing to wear. I'm going to walk in there in a t-shirt to meet the commissioners.
Yeah, you got to find your short sleeve golf shirts.
That's right. Got to dig them out somewhere.
Yeah, dig them out.
Now, how are things going at the commission? Christy, I'll start with her. Commissioner Haswell, I'll start with you.
No, it's going well. As you know, we're in our budget discussions right now, so needing to get those wrapped up here in the next week or two. It's a little tougher conversation this year with some of the impacts we've seen from the property tax bills, which we knew were coming. Mm-hmm. But we're working through that. Yeah.
You know, we've just been really having a lot of discussions about the budget, different issues, and working on that. And then Commissioner Wright's been out this week. Unfortunately, his father just passed away, and he's been out this week. So we've had four commissioners this week. And when you have four commissioners, when you have an even number of commissioners, sometimes it can lead to some tie votes and whatnot. But, I mean, everything's been just moving forward, and we're going to have a budget done here hopefully next week and be in pretty good shape. And, just keep everything rolling along the best we can.
When it comes to the budget, I got some questions I'll be asking in the last section. So, folks, stick around. We're going to go over that budget. Now, recently, you had to consider many appointments to differing boards throughout the county. I've often talked about people volunteering for boards or putting their name into the hat to get on one of these. I feel that it is a big responsibility that people should take quite seriously. Although it may appear pretty routine, what are some things that you think about as you look at individuals who are coming onto the board who applied?
I would say interest, first and foremost, and then making sure folks are aware of the time requirements.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to appoint someone and then have them miss half the meetings. That just doesn't help the board get their work done. I don't know, Nick, what else
well,
would you
add? Well, one of the things that I always kind of look at is and we interview all the candidates before we select our boards, and I always look at how they would probably fit with the rest of the board and how, you know, the cooperation that they have in working together with other members of the board. And then certainly we're just looking for a background in the area that they're interested in. It was pretty interesting, actually. We just recently had 7 people apply for planning and zoning board, and we had 2 openings. And I mean, all 7 of them had excellent qualifications, excellent knowledge, excellent background, and it becomes tough. I mean, you hate to have someone want to volunteer to be on a board and then get told, well, sorry, you didn't get picked. But
yeah,
when you have 7 people volunteer and there's only 2 openings, some very, very excellent people, and you just hope that they look around and apply for other boards or apply again in the future.
Yeah.
I think too, you know, when you're filling a board position because someone's left, it's good to know what kind of skill set you're trying to fill. So did they have a specific background that really added to that board in terms of their knowledge and experience? And are you trying to replace that? Do you need something new? I think it's good to understand that as well.
You know, let's take like a SAWS board as an example. You got to know a lot of things about water. It's kind of critical.
So, and the SAWS board is interesting because that's going to be county commissioners and city councilmen and women. So it's interest, and then it's wanting to get up to speed. And Mr. Coughlin, our manager there at SAWS, our administrator, he does a nice job doing an orientation with our engineering firm that does a lot of our support work, just going over the whole system, kind of the history of the system, where we are today, future projects, because it's a complicated system with the city. It's a pile of spaghetti for sure.
Yeah. And you'd kind of have to be read in to kind of that situation. Are there other boards that carry that kind of complication, like the planning and zoning board? Sitting here and speaking with the county planner, you know, there was a lot of complications involved in that underneath that I'd never even considered. But as through the course of our conversation, kind of realized, wow, there's a lot of weight to sitting on that board.
You know, we have a county comprehensive plan, that land use plan, that kind of outlines what the regulations are, and then also then outlines what the has been thought as being the important areas of growth and where certain things can be and where certain things can't. But you have to take every item on an individual basis and look through it and see what kind of impact it has, what impact it has on an area, what impact it has on the neighbors in the area. And there's a lot of complicated things with planning and zoning. And then the planning and zoning board makes recommendations to the commissioners, and then we have to go through all their recommendations and almost always go out and on site and look at things and really try and figure it out, because, you know, you're making permanent things for your county through land use. So it's pretty important.
Decisions affect people.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think that's something that a lot of individuals need to kind of weigh, you know, what decision will affect what people and how. Now, how does board appointment work? If somebody's out there and they're thinking, you know, I would like to be involved in my community, I would like to be involved in one of these, what's one of the first things that they do if they've looked at their skill set, they found a board that they like, and they feel that they can contribute to? Where do they go from there?
Okay, so they just submit a letter of interest to our HR department that we look at, and then when that board has openings, then we, like I said, we interview the candidates based on there's a short application they fill out and then a letter of interest. And then we look at their skill sets and we go from there.
We post those positions on our website.
Correct.
For those boards. Yeah.
And as you said, Commissioner Haswell, it's really, you need to consider the amount of time that you may be spending on this. And I know the county commission goes out and looks at some of this stuff, but I imagine the planning and zoning commission or board does as well. They might go out and take a look at a site, get some eyes on it, especially if it's something that they have never, a place they've never been.
And our county planner and our county engineer are very good about taking those groups of people mm-hmm. out and explaining the intricacies of it. And they're very good about doing that with county commissioners too. We have a unique situation in terms of county commissioners because we can only go two at a time. We can't take all five commissioners in a van and go look at something.
Oh, really?
because if we have a majority of the commissioners there, then we're considered to have a quorum. And so we can only go like two at a time.
Wow.
Or we're subject to the public meeting rules. And so it's interesting that, and sometimes I think it's almost unfortunate that we're not allowed to like go out and look at something and visit about it while we're out there, but you just legally, we can't do that. So we just have to go out two at a time. So sometimes we keep the engineer and the planner pretty busy taking us out on tours of different things.
I guess I would recommend too, if someone's interested in a board position, you know, we can provide the list of the other members if they wanted to pick their brain on what the time commitment is. You know, for example, historic preservation, they pretty continuously have projects that they're working on. So it's not just the monthly meetings. It's work outside of the meetings that they do on top of it.
Same with the county rec board. I mean, mm-hmm. they have a lot of things going on that they need to go look at and see what's going on and see what improvements are needed in different areas. And yeah, there's a lot of things that you can do on boards, and it's very important work for us.
And a lot of time that you can give volunteering to your community in doing so. You know, an active board is a great board. If you go to an organization and they're operated by a board and you see the board members there actively participating, those are the things I personally like to see myself.
And if you're new to boards, it's a great way to kind of learn about what it means to be a board member. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're thinking about maybe running for office, I think that's a great way to just get a toe in the water and get a sense for it.
And you really start to understand the minutiae of the bureaucracy that is government. Because, you know, bureaucracy comes with every government, and we got to have T's crossed, I's dotted, and things signed.
There's things you can do and things you can't do, but I will certainly say, as far as the county goes at least, when we have these boards and they're working on projects and whatever, I mean, we get reports from them. We have a liaison from the county commission to every board so that we kind of keep abreast of what's going on. But we don't micromanage our boards. I mean, that's what we have them for. If we were going to do all the work, we wouldn't need the boards.
Yeah.
So we don't micromanage the boards. We have the boards out there to do what they do. And once in a while, they have to make a recommendation or perhaps ask for some money to do a project or whatever. But for the most part, as commissioners, we just sit as liaisons to those boards and then act as, you know, kind of advisors if they need to know if something is legal or whatever, and then just go from there.
Now, those liaisons during meetings, do they, you know, the county commissioner, because you've both been liaisons for a board, are you currently now?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. For example, the library is a county liaison position. And so I'm just there to provide an update from the county if we have any, and then just, you know, listen in on their board meeting and then pass that information on to the other commissioners so they know kind of what the library is working on.
Yeah.
But I'm not, I don't vote on anything. I'm not a voting member as a liaison.
And no decisions are made by the commission on the board itself. You're just there to gather information, take it back to the commission.
Exactly.
And I'm the liaison to both the hospital board and the county fair board.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just gather input and listen and I mean, answer questions if they ask, but that's what input is, basically just when they ask and just to be a source for them.
A lot of those are both great boards to be a part of. A lot of great things happening at the library. Yeah. A lot of fantastic things happening out at the hospital. So I imagine those meetings are actually pretty cool to be a part of.
They're very interesting, yeah.
All right, switching gears on you real quick. How's County Road and Bridge doing with the roads this year?
Go ahead, Christy. I know you got a little more information.
Oh, well, so we're just wrapping up the dust abatement in the county, and we're getting ready to start hauling gravel to fill in some of those potholes after all that rain and everything, all the moisture this winter. So watch for those haul trucks on the road. As folks know, we'll be starting on construction for red grade improvements, kind of that first segment, not until 2026, so next year. We do have phase two funded, which goes from kind of the end point of phase one and continues into the forest. The Forest Service is also working on some funding for regraveling segments of red grade road. So there's just some improvements there. You know, it got really hammered during the Elk Fire, tons of traffic on it as they were creating that fire break. And that also, you know, is probably going to ease up some of the construction that they have to do up there. And then Ken did want to mention that our Early Creek project will be starting July 1st. We're replacing some culverts with a box culvert. That'll take about a month to complete. And then next Tuesday, we do have a red grade closure for a Russell Creek culvert. They've got to replace a culvert that was crushed during the Elk Fire.
Yeah. So those trucks are heavy.
They are so heavy. those are kind of some of the projects coming up.
All right.
And if you've been up red grade recently, there was a lot of widening done up there already, and a lot of the vegetation along the roads widened out, and you can really see well when you drive up red grade right now. It's cleared out a little bit, and by the way, if you do want to cut some firewood, there's a lot of firewood available up there, up red grade.
You can get your permits online with the Forest Service.
Correct. Oh, fantastic. And now's the time to get it done.
You bet.
I can remember when we had a wood-burning stove. Boy, that was part of your summer.
Oh, yeah.
I do that myself. You betcha.
Into the back of the truck, and Dak took you up to the middle of nowhere, and you just started hauling wood around.
Yep. Remember the pieces of foam my mom would cut from just those like 4-inch foam mattresses, and we'd stick them under our shirt on top of our shoulders so my sister and I could carry the logs to the truck. They had it down. Mom and dad had it down.
Yeah, that's good.
I just had a 10-year-old shoulder. That's all I have. All right, we're going to continue with our Sheridan County Commission right after this. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to Compass Center for Families.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit efirstfederal.bank, member FDIC.
Looking to start a business or take your hobby to the next level? Synergy Shop Aminiums is the answer. Need a toy box for your classic rods? Business location that needs parking and easy access for van or truck traffic? Got a service like taxidermy or sporting goods that need a storefront, counter, and storage in the back? Synergy Shop Aminiums are customizable spaces designed for trades, small businesses, and your hobby dreams. High ceilings, large bay doors, and owner-friendly built-ins. Located near everything, reserve yours at Sheridan Realty Associates.
This is Brad at Prime Rate Motors Super Trailer Store, here to tell you we are completely stocked up with all types of aluminum and steel livestock trailers. We carry the most proven, durable brands like Wilson, Merritt, Murhau, and GR. With over 30-plus in-stock models available, we are eager to make you a deal you cannot resist. All types of trade-ins are accepted and financing is available. That's Prime Rate Motors, 2305 Coffeyne Avenue, and online at primeratemotors.com.
The following message is presented by Century21BHJ.com.
Are you the kind of person who loves a good puzzle, keeping things running like clockwork, and thrives in the middle of the action? The Hub on Smith is looking for a transportation specialist, aka dispatcher extraordinaire, to help keep our wheels rolling and our community connected. You'll be the friendly voice on the phone. You'll coordinate rides with heart and precision. Communicate with our awesome team of drivers. Be a hero behind the scenes. CAPE optional. Apply today. www.thehubonsmith.org.
It is Thursday, and that means it's time for Hop Eyes on SheridanMedia.com. Right now, you can head over there and find deals for up to 50% off of retail value. This week, we have dining gift certificates, service gift certificates, merchandising gift certificates, and a bunch more. You can find whatever it is you're looking for all from local Sheridan retailers, and they all start at half off of retail value. Head over right now to SheridanMedia.com and click on the Hop Eyes button and place your bids. Hurry, though, bidding ends tonight at 8 p.m.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting. This morning, we are with Sheridan County Commissioners Christy Haswell and Nick Siddle. All right, so I've seen this word quite a bit. I kind of know what it means, but a lot of people might not. Vacating a public right of way. What does it mean when the commission has to go forward with something like this?
Well, Floyd, you know, back when the our area was surveyed and way back when there was a lot of right-of-ways that were actually put in so that people would be able to get to certain areas or like when one of the ones, I mean, that you've seen recently is Downers Addition. There's a lot of streets that were, when they originally did that plat down there was a lot of different streets put in there, and it just hasn't developed in that way. And so there's a lot of places where there's actually a right-of-way for a roadway that is never used, that probably doesn't appear like there's ever going to be a public use or a right-of-way there. And so to vacate it basically means that if you've got a, say, a 60-foot strip there that's a section, in most cases, if it's vacated, then the property line becomes the middle of where the road was, and the two property owners on the other side just get to have that property because it is in conjunction with their property. And in a lot of cases, those people are using that right now anyway because there's no roads there.
Bad places for roads.
Or in places, yeah, that are way too steep or way, you know, maybe not the right kind of property, a little bit boggy or whatever, where you wouldn't want to put a road anyway.
We did recently have one, though, that we denied because it did look like there was good probability of future use for a roadway. Mm. Or we've had ones where we will vacate, but we retain a utility easement. So we know we won't put a road there, but we want to make sure that if we city needed to put utilities through, they could still do it.
And in a lot of the cases, sometimes there are already utilities that are there in that area. Mm-hmm. And we just, you know, give a right to keep the utilities there and for the power company, gas company, or whatever to work on their lines and do whatever they need to do there. But so we give a utility easement in the vacated right-of-way.
Now, to come to the conclusions of this, it's going to be quite the process. Talking to the property owners themselves, figuring out what the property is going to be used for, what it is used for, what they're utilizing it for now, and sitting down with that county planner and saying, do we have any plans in the near future or anything like that? I mean, what else is involved?
So basically the process, usually landowners propose it to us. There's a process where they can propose a vacation. They propose the vacation, and then we have to appoint a viewer, which in most cases is our county engineer, to go out and take a look at it and see what the implications are, whether we ever believe that we would want to build a road there or whether we really believe there would need to be a road there. and I mean, most assuredly, if it's the only access to someone's property or whatever, then we're not going to vacate it. Mm-hmm. And if it looks like there's going to be development in an area and we may eventually need a road there, then we're not going to vacate it. But in some cases, like Commissioner Haswell said, where it makes no sense, the land's too steep, the land has cattails on it, the land, whatever, is a wetland, whatever, or there's two houses and one on each end that are already accessible by roads on other two sides, that it just makes no sense that there would ever be a road there, then it's certainly possible to vacate it.
And there's a notice that goes out to surrounding landowners, and part of the process is that application that they submit. And then we'll put out a notice to the public, a notice of intent to vacate. And so if folks want to protest or have a question, they've got that opportunity to do that.
So and then we always have a public hearing before we do a vacation.
So you can hear comments.
Sure. Yeah.
So if someone is planning on maybe putting a house over here, and that's the only road that I would be able to use that for, but I just haven't gotten around to doing it yet. Is that a protest?
Right. Yeah. Well, then they can protest, or they can come forward and say, hey. Or the other thing that we have done in some cases is vacate a road, but give the landowners, the neighboring landowners, the right to still use the area, or, you know, the neighbors can't lock each other out, basically. Mm-hmm. So they still have access to their property, but that it's not a public road.
So when these roads are laid out, I imagine it's probably quite a while ago, maybe in some cases not that long ago. How often do you sit down and create new roads?
You know, we haven't done that for a while. And honestly, Downer Edition has been where, gosh, almost all of them have been, unless, you know, we've had a handful of county roads that were maybe more all-weather roads that nobody's using. And so we vacated some of those easements, or county roads that were never built.
Yeah.
And we've had some in Story as well. There's been some areas in Story where there's basically one landowner on the end of an area that there's no need to have a public right-of-way to it or whatever. I mean, we don't initiate the process. It's landowners in the area that initiate the process. And in most cases anymore, when there's, for example, through planning and zoning, when there's a subdivision development, then the subdivision is responsible for their roads.
Yeah.
And they're responsible for maintaining them. But in a lot of cases, those subdivision roads are actually legally public roads, because they have to be public roads so that emergency services can use them.
Oh, wow.
And so subdivisions, although they build their own roads and they're responsible for maintaining those roads, they have to be public roads so that emergency services, ambulance, sheriffs, fire departments, or whatever can use them.
Land issues are pretty complicated.
They can be.
Once you get up there to the county level. And understanding and knowing all these various processes and techniques to ensuring that these roads are either vacated, taken care of, or accessible. Is that something, as a commissioner, you had to learn on the fly? Or is that one of those situations where a county planner or an engineer set you down and said, okay, this is how we get things done up here?
I would say all of the above.
Right.
You know, and we have great support staff, and so you know, we lean on them and their expertise.
And we have, you know, Floyd, we have staff meetings every Monday, and so whenever there's any kind of a report needed, or this can be a very informational thing where our elected officials or our people that work for us, planning, our planner, our engineer, or whatever, where they're just there to inform us about what's going on and make sure that we're educated on it.
Yeah.
And everybody's very good about that. And I think there's a very much of an interest in the county commissioners to just be informed. And their thing, I will say, is like, I know this morning Commissioner Haswell ran up to the planning office and the engineer's office to get some information we could present today. I was in with our administrator to get some information I needed from him if we wanted to talk about it today. Just, they're great at answering questions and providing us with the information that we need in order to get things done.
I'll tell you what, if I was a county commissioner, they'd probably get sick of seeing this face.
Because we have had situations where, you know, we've had folks call about roads that are in disrepair.
Yeah.
And we've had to say, sorry. Not a county road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then folks can apply and propose that it becomes a county road. And we haven't had that situation, but it's hard when you want to, you know, you jump in to help and then
you find out that you
can't. Not our road.
Not a county road. So we have plenty of trouble keeping up with all the county roads that we have. So,
and I imagine that could be like an insurance thing or anything like that, so they won't allow it no matter what. I could imagine, you know, you don't go out there taking care of a road that's not yours, because other issues could come up.
Payer
Money. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? So now you're picking winners and losers if it's not a county road. So
all right, switching gears on you. Sheridan County Emergency Management, Sheridan County Airport, recently held their mass casualty exercise. I had both of them in here. It was fantastic talking to them. I think this mass casualty exercise, it's not only required, but I think it's fantastic for everybody who takes part in this so that we can actually find any holes and get those filled up. Commissioner Siddle, you attended the after briefing, correct?
Correct.
Yes, how did it go?
You know, everything went very well. They had a mass casualty exercise, which was basically a simulated airplane crash. And I guess I didn't get to see all the people involved, but our public health office was very good at putting some very realistic makeup on some of the casualties of the accident. And it even, they went so far as to say that one of the casualties, when they were trying to ask her questions about what was going on, she would only speak to them in Dutch.
Oh, wow. Fantastic.
So, you know, to simulate a tourist coming into town or
absolutely.
Whatever. And they weren't expecting that. So that was something that was sure interesting. But you know, it was fire, ambulance, search and rescue, everyone that would respond to an accident, city police, sheriffs, everybody involved in it, so that all the emergency management services in the county came together to work on it. And everything, for the most part, went very well. I will say that you always do this to find out if there are any issues, and kind of appears like the only real issue we had was with some of our communications equipment, which tower was going to what area and how that all worked and whether everybody was on that was getting all the messages that they needed. And so that's something that we learn as we go and how we take care of things. But overall, the response was really good. And I think that the drill was passed with flying colors, and, you know, it's just impossible to do it unless you simulate the real thing.
Yeah. So, and that's why exercises like this are doing
right.
They may have passed, but we did find an issue that we can address going forward.
And it won't happen again.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So, yeah.
All right.
Very good.
On that, I got to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Sheridan County Weed and Pest. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to Compass Center for Families.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit efirstfederal.bank, member FDIC.
Elevate your summer travel plans. Fly local, fly Sheridan. Bring your loved ones home to Sheridan this busy summer with reliable, comfortable travel through United Express, operated by SkyWest Airlines. Enjoy the convenience of Sheridan to Denver in no time by flying local. Book flights at united.com, the United app, or call United Reservations at 1-800-UNITED-1. Tickets also available on Travelocity, Expedia, Kayak, and more. For stress-free summer travel home, fly local, fly Sheridan.
Not sure who to trust with a redo of the roof and siding on your home? Call the pros. This is Nate with Pro Plus, and we've been Northeastern Wyoming's premier roofing, siding, and storm damage restoration contractor for over 20 years. We are fully licensed, bonded, insured, and have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. Don't trust your most valuable investment with just any contractor. Call the pros. We'll handle all the repairs and walk you through the insurance process. Give us a call today, 675-0889. For a free, no-obligation inspection and estimate.
Doug, I hear something sizzling at Waring Chevrolet, and it's not just the barbecue.
You got it, Bob. Our free customer appreciation barbecue is Friday, June 27th from 11:30 to 1:30, and we're serving up big savings during our inventory reduction sale going on right now.
New or pre-owned, there are deals up to $10,000 off, and you'll meet or beat any deal in writing?
Absolutely. Great food, great folks, and even better deals.
Don't miss it. Waring Chevrolet, 107 East Alger, online, waringsheridan.com.
God bless the USA, where the right to bear arms will not be infringed upon. The Sky Blue Gun Show is this weekend at Metro Park. Friday from 2 to 7 p.m., Saturday 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Sunday 9 a.m. to 2. Guns, ammo, optics, and more. You can buy, sell, or trade your way through this can't-miss show. Now offering chances to win various prizes all weekend long, including a gun. Bring your family to the gun show this weekend at Metro Park. See you there.
Hi there, I'm Taylor, front of house manager at Frackleton's, right here on Main Street in downtown Sheridan. At Frackleton's, great food is just where it starts. From the second you step inside, we aim to treat you like family. Your server, more like a personal guide to a perfect meal, offering up pairings, suggestions, and a smile to boot. Whether you're grabbing dinner, celebrating something big, or just treating yourself, we'll make it a meal to remember. Don't forget to snag a table ahead of time at Frackleton's.com.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse, brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting. This morning I'm speaking with Sheridan County Commissioners Christy Haswell and Nick Siddle. Now, I promised you a report on the budget, but before we get there, Sheridan County Weed and Pests have been mitigating the mosquitoes in the area, as well as keeping a very close eye on the elk fire and the house draw fire burn scars. Now, when we look at those, Commissioner Haswell, you seem to know a little bit about this. We talked about it. What if they told you about the invasive grass species? I know Walker told me it was going to take a little while.
Yeah, correct. I think the key thing is you don't want to go out and start spraying everything, because there are some things you want your natives to come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the fire went through, let's say on the Remington fire, a ponderosa stand, well, you might have some ponderosas coming back. So it's kind of wait, monitor, really keep an eye on those places we knew we had infestations before the fire, and just keep an eye on them. And I, you know, a shout out as we were just talking to Walker Billings with Sheridan Weed and Pest, and just the collaborative effort with the Forest Service on the elk fire specifically, the UW Extension, UW's Imagine program. It's kind of no one group has enough personnel mm-hmm. and manpower to do it themselves. So it's all hands on deck, and it's been a really incredibly collaborative process. So proud of their work.
You know, if you're going to try and stack the cards, you stack the cards with the UW Extension over here, who's been experimenting on this stuff for two decades.
Yep.
And hopefully that, you know, we've got aces up our sleeves and we're ready to throw them. How concerning to the commission is this issue?
Oh, it's very concerning. You know, and once again, we talked about boards earlier. We have our Weed and Pest has a board, a Weed and Pest board, and we have a wide variety of knowledge there to help us with it. You know, from people who have grazing permits, the people who know a lot about what's going on. But it's very concerning because we have to, we're one of the hot areas for these invasive grasses. And as this stuff comes back, we need to make sure, like Commissioner Haswell said, that we're getting the native species that we want and not getting, you know, Ventanata to mm-hmm. take over the area and Medusa head and whatever, because once they get a stranglehold, then we're in a world of hurt. So
well,
we've got to really work on that.
Yeah. And then, you know, even cheatgrass, we're increasing our burn cycles. Now we're even more likely to have another one. The impacts to grazing, loss of forage for cattle, sheep, and wildlife, ungulates and bird species. Now we're losing diversity. I mean, it's dominoes if we don't get on top of it.
And this is one of those issues that, you know, the further you dig into the concerns, the more concerned you get, because you suddenly realize that these invasive grasses have got their fingers in everything.
Oh, yeah.
They could really affect every little thing about our lifestyle up here.
Yeah.
Well, and it's an ongoing process. That's the one thing that people, well, get the recovery done. This recovery is going to take decades.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something that you get the recovery done this year, go spray it and it's done and you're over it. You know, it's got to be monitored. We've got to watch it. We've got to hit the areas that need hit, and just it's going to be an ongoing process for a long, long time.
Walker and his team have definitely got job security going into the future right now. I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because someone has got to be out there looking for it. All right, folks, I promised you we'd talk about the budget, so let's move on to that. Now, one more time, where is Sheridan County at in the process of the budget?
So we're probably in round three of working through drafts of the budget. Nothing's been finalized yet. We're going to reconvene next week on Tuesday and discuss again. You know, as we talked about, just with revenues being down, we had asked departments to go to the 24-25 year budget and take 8% off, just to get us to the number we would need to be at. And so kudos to our departments who have all come back and cut what they could. You know, we provide a lot of services. We don't have a lot of things other than, you know, our graders and road and bridge or patrol cars at the sheriff's department. So at a certain point, you can only cut so much paper.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to start looking at personnel. So I'm sure folks heard about us putting kind of a hiring freeze on. We've got some folks retiring. We have some open positions that we haven't been able to fill, but we felt like we needed to pump the brakes there a little bit. So if a department's looking at hiring, then they would just come to the commission and specifically request that. We're not saying it's not going to happen, but we just need to keep the budget in mind as we move forward.
Going
to
go through on a case-by-case basis, is this a critical position that needs to be filled?
Because at a certain point, you know, we worry about being able to take care of our statutory duties.
Yeah.
And we don't want to cut staff to, let's say, the clerk or the treasurer's office, and then folks want to take care of some paperwork for their car over lunch break, and an hour's not enough to get through the line.
Come back on Tuesday, right?
Come back on Tuesday. And our assessor's office, making sure they've got the staff to be going out to the field, doing their assessments, you know, if you just added a garage to your house or finished your basement, or maybe now a shed is too old to hold the same value that it used to. They need to be able to get in the field. So if we cut, how do we know that they can get out there? Because statutorily, I think it's every 3 to 5 years they have to reevaluate your home on the ground. And then that on top of, you know, they were slammed before, and then they had all the applications for the property tax relief.
Yeah.
And so anyway, we're trying to balance all of that.
And along with, you know, obviously we road and bridge, we can't neglect our roads. That's probably the number one thing that we hear about, and we've got to make sure that we're still staffed in road and bridge. But the truth of the matter is, Floyd, is that we having to reduce our budget, and I know people just think the government is plush and you can just reduce your budget easily. Well, the majority of our budget is staffing. And so it's very hard to reduce your budget significantly without reducing staffing.
Yeah.
So that's, and as we all know, when you reduce staffing, then you're going to reduce services. You just have to. So
I think the hard
that's
part
the way it is.
Too is that, you know, we can't do anything about the cost of health insurance.
Yeah.
And we've seen those go up about 6%, and you know, our HR staff and our administrative director do a great job shopping around every year, making sure they're getting the best deal they can. But those costs are going to go up. It's kind of doom and gloom, but employees are going to be paying more out of pocket for benefits. So, you know, what does it look like if we can't give them a 2.5% raise?
Yeah.
Contributions to state retirement have gone up some too. So, you know, benefits cost, and that's one, I guess that is one good thing about working for the county or the city or whatever, is that there are good benefits. But when those costs go up, some of those get passed on to our employees. You know, I was really interested to read in the paper the last couple of days that I guess I never quite realized this as much. The city's budget is about $140 million, And the county budget is just over $20 million. So
yeah.
it's a big difference. And so we took about a $1.8 million pay cut. That's a pretty big chunk out of roughly just over a $20 million budget.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, so that's what the property tax reduction and the PILT, which is payment in lieu of taxes that the federal government pays, took a drop back to. And so that's roughly where we were at in terms of what our numbers were down. So
the biggest challenge for the year is that balancing of services and ensuring that the employees are taken care of, even though, as you said, the doom and gloom, you might have to pay some more out of pocket for certain benefits.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to these cost increases, was there anything else? Fuel or anything like that kind of took you by surprise when you started to see this price? Has anything else risen to the point where just kind of knocked your socks off?
You know, well, first of all, our Road and Bridge thinks that our fuel is not going to be any more expensive this year than it was last year, at least. So that's a positive thing. I'll tell you, the first year I was a commissioner 6.5 years ago, we bought a new road grader and it was $185,000. And this year we bought a new road grader that was $460,000.
My goodness.
So, wow. Yeah, you know, I mean, that's the cost of those kind of things and vehicle prices when, you know, we have to have vehicles for the sheriff's department, vehicles for Road and Bridge, vehicles for the coroner's office, vehicles, I mean, all that kind of stuff. The cost of that, as we all know, has really gone up.
That's so incredible.
And I think delays in getting those vehicles. I know the airport, I believe it was the snow plow.
We've been out 3.5 years waiting on a new snow plow.
Since the order went in.
Yeah.
Three and a half years waiting on a piece of equipment to show up.
Yeah. Yep.
That's ridiculous.
Yep. Yep.
Now, when you sit down and look at a budget, I'll start with you, Commissioner Haswell. What's one of the first things that you really like to look at first?
You know, one of the first things that we do is we set up meetings with all of our departments. And go line item by line item through everything. And they have a good sense of what did they not spend last year?
Mm-hmm.
Do they see costs increasing somewhere else? And they all do such a great, great job with their budgets and understanding it inside and out. You know, I think at that point and kind of where we're at now is, all right. Well, if we're in the red, 100,000, do we need to find another cut? Or knowing that we're over a little bit with our GPET funding, can we use that? So we're kind of at that point now, after several renditions, meeting with all of our department heads.
And I mean, I guess Floyd, the first thing that I always look at is, what are our revenues? You can't decide what your expenditures are going to be until you know what your revenues are.
Yeah.
And we've had a real challenge with that, finding our total revenues, because, for example, the long-term homeowners exemption that was the 50% reduction, they had until the 29th of May to file for that. And so we're just sitting waiting. We had 40 people come in the last day and file for that. And so our assessor's office has just done a tremendous job and worked overtime in trying to get us numbers so that we know what our revenues are.
Wow.
Because you can't possibly calculate how much money you can spend if you don't know how much money you're bringing in to start with.
And that's got to be such a difficult thing to do.
Oh, yeah. And of course, every property owner got a 25% reduction. And so figuring that all the way across the board, you know, to figure, so you got to certainly know what your revenues are before you determine how much your budgets can be for each department.
Now, there has been talk. I saw a recent news story. The legislature may consider eliminating property tax altogether. What would that do to local governments throughout the entire state?
Well, you know, it really depends on where they try to find those revenues. You know, there was some discussion of increasing sales tax. Mm. But now who's paying for that? Now those folks who really needed, you know, the break to begin with, folks on a fixed income, now we have to increase sales tax to 15-20%.
My goodness.
To make up the, you know, what we'd lose from property tax. I mean, it's just we got to keep our roads in shape. We have to keep ambulances on the road. And there's just yeah, it's got to come from somewhere. Are we going to have a state income tax then? Like, how are we going to fill that hole?
Robbing Peter because to pay Paul, right?
Oil and gas isn't coming back the way folks want it to. Yeah. So, and you know, I know there's been some talk about putting the burden on them, but that's not going to last forever.
Yeah.
You know, it was really interesting, Floyd. I was at a meeting a while back where someone was talking about, of course, everybody always wants to compare us to Campbell County, of course. And so they're our neighbors. And I got up and made the mention to the legislator from Campbell County who was speaking that yeah, it's a little easier to make do in Campbell County. Their mineral assessment last year was $3.2 billion in Campbell County.
Goodness.
The mineral assessment in Sheridan County was $2 million. I mean, a lot of people say, well, we have coal mines. No, our coal mines are in Montana. We have a lot of people work in the coal mines, but the coal mines are in Montana. You know, so we just don't, our mineral income in Sheridan County is minuscule. And so we really count a lot more on property taxes than many of the other counties do.
Absolutely. I run out of time with you. I'm sorry.
Okay,
I really enjoyed this conversation, especially towards the end there. I would love to get your thoughts going forward next time.
All right. Thanks a lot, Floyd.
All right. You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
The Board of Directors of First Federal Bank and Trust is proud to announce DJ Dearcorn as our new president and CEO-elect. DJ will take over from current CEO Kevin Bailey, who will be retiring in January.
DJ has built a reputation of strong leadership, integrity, and commitment throughout his many years with First Federal.
As DJ, our management team, and staff lead us forward, we're excited for the future and grateful for the trust of the communities we serve.
First Federal Bank and Trust. Community commitment. Lifetime legacy. Member FDIC.
The City of Sheridan Weed and Pest Division would like to remind the public that mosquito prevention is a community-wide effort. Please remember to drain standing water, dress appropriately, and apply mosquito repellent, especially during the hours around dusk and dawn. For more information, to report heavy concentrations of mosquitoes, or to request that your home be in a no spray zone, please call the mosquito hotline at 307-655-8297 or visit the website at www.sheridanwi.gov.
So my buddy asked me what I was doing with a fork in the toaster. Experimenting, I said, well, the same goes for you tuning up or fixing your own 4x4 side by side or lawnmower, because you won't do it, and if you do it, you'll do it wrong. Look, sticking a fork in a toaster ain't figuring anything out. And you ain't better off just doing nothing. I mean, you could just wait till it bursts into flames and really do it with flair. So don't experiment with your tune-up. Get it done right at Hando Service Center on Sheridan's Heartland Drive.
Oh, summer's here. Time to get your car ready for summer driving. Midas can help with everything from oil change to tires, steering and suspension, air conditioning, check engine lights. It's your one-stop shop for all things cars and trucks. This month, get free digital inspection when you bring your car to Midas and a voucher for $20 off any detailed service from Sheridan Auto Spa. Plus, special savings on brakes and struts. Get your car cleaned up and running great inside and out at Midas Tire and Auto in Sheridan.
Try it once and Himalayan Kitchen will have you craving another flavor explosion. They offer the taste you've been searching for. Dive into authentic Himalayan dishes with 5 different spice levels. There's something for everyone. Vegetarian? Their mouthwatering veggie options will leave you satiated. Come experience bold, unforgettable flavors at Himalayan Kitchen, where every bite is a journey. Crave it, spice it, love it. Dine in or take out. 2125 North Main Street or HimalayanKitchenWY.com.
This is Ed McIntosh with your song requests on Classic Country Sunday. We're live from 8 until noon every Sunday on KWYO Sheridan.